Welcome back. You may know me as the undocumented killer. I'm telling the story of how I ended up at undocumented in the first place. It started with a breakup. I'd been living with Carla for about 7 years. 7 years. That's long enough to forget what the other person is like. 7 years is about how long Roman marriages used to last. 7 years is long enough that you figure one thing out. I'm trying to remember what Carla was like before we got together. I remember how we met. We were in chemistry lab. She was taking so long to use the digital scale. She couldn't figure out that she had to reset it, then put the flask on the scale, and then write down the weight. Looking back on it, she was probably high. The chemistry lab was on a Friday, which makes that more likely. I did something. I do this thing, maybe you do it, where I was mouthing something, and then it turns into a little dialogue. Then I answered myself out loud. I was standing behind her, waiting to use the scale, and kind of debating with myself what her problem was. What I said out loud was, she probably wouldn't be here if she were retarded. Carla heard me. She turned around. She was laughing. She said, I wouldn't be so sure about that. I'm obviously retarded if I can't use a scale. But we can't all be retarded. You're probably not retarded, so help me with this. And I did. Carla found me hilarious. She wanted me to meet her friends. I remember meeting one guy who had dreadlocks. Carla was saying, you literally won't believe the stuff that he says out loud. Then I said, you won't have to believe it. If you hear something, that's perception. Perception is totally different from... The guy with dreadlocks said, I see what you mean. He was talking to Carla. We spent a lot of time together in college. She was doing different kinds of drugs and going to clubs. But after she did the drugs, or while she was doing them, she liked to come and talk to me. She always said, you never get high, but I love being high with you. Eventually, Carla, I should explain, there used to be people who planned trips for you. Today, talking about a travel agent is like talking about a blacksmith. Only, I bet if you learned how to be a blacksmith, you could have a thriving business for people who were curious about what blacksmithing is, or who wanted a handcrafted horseshoe to hang over a door. Nobody wants a handcrafted trip to Costa Rica. And nobody even knows what that means. Carla took me home to meet her mom, and her mom thought I was just great. I didn't smell like weed. I wasn't pierced. I wore clothes she could understand. I remember her saying, you know, you really are good for that girl. I bet you take care of her. I said, I don't know what friendship means. She said, I think you'd be really good for her. After college, neither Carla nor I had any plans. She moved back in with her mom. The day her mom came to help her move out, she offered me a job and a place to stay. And that's how Carla and I ended up living together. Our time together, it involved a lot of meeting people. There was a lot of hearing how much people drank, how much weed they smoked, and what ecstasy is like. There's sex between us. There's saying we're not exclusive. There's jealousy. If you've ever been in your 20s and had a relationship with someone in their 20s, then you know what this part was like. Carla's mom's travel agency went out of business. I was out of a job. Carla and I decided that I should move back home, to my home, Lakewood, California. My parents were still there. It wasn't like I had never talked to them during this period. I was just telling the story of Carla and me. My parents only met her once at our graduation. They did not like her. Their biblical references left her cold. She had never heard of any of the Christian rock bands they asked her about. I remember Carla said, "I can see them being your parents. They're weird like you, but in a boring way." So I moved back in with my weird, boring parents. Carla stayed with her mom. She had started making jewelry and selling it. I went back to Lakewood thinking I would find a job quickly, get my own place, and then Carla would move out there with me. She said, "I love the whole idea of California." After I was there a few months, I noticed changes in Carla's Facebook. She would post those crypty, moody status updates, like, "Feeling lonely." Guys started responding to those. The longest comments were always from that guy with dreadlocks, the one who said, "I see what you mean," after he met me. After a few of his long comments, I started seeing pictures of them at concerts. Then Carla's relationship status changed. Then it changed again. It changed one more time, and the two of them were in a relationship. Understand that she and I were still talking nearly every day at this point. I raised the subject of all her Facebook activity several times. She said, "Facebook is Facebook." I said, "I can't argue with that. It's tautological. But tautologies don't give me any new information." She said, "I don't know what that means. I think you need to find someone like you who can love you the way you need to be loved." I said, "I thought love was the same for everybody." She stopped taking my calls. Oh, the wrath. My rage at that point. Not that it ended, but how it ended. Not that it was over, but it was over publicly. That there had not been some private moment. A visit. What kind of person was she? I was actually asking myself that because I don't know. When I thought about it, I had no idea. What were her motives, and what did she think about? Did she have the same kinds of thoughts that I did? Did she have a sense of right and wrong? Did she have something as simple as manners? Whatever she was, whatever she is, it's totally different from whatever I am. She didn't have a moral sense. People could be like that. They could totally lack the thing that keeps us from doing wrong. It didn't seem fair that people like that were mixed in with people like me. I knew right from wrong. I knew how to treat people. So there I was, just in Lakewood, no longer planning something. You understand? I'd been looking for a job for something else, for having a life with Carla. maybe a life that expanded to include children, or anyway, pets and plants. The kind of life that would change and get better, where there was something to look forward to, and something to worry about within reason. Then it was gone. It was just me, living with my parents. I'd made an adult decision to carry my life forward, and I ended up a child. That's the emotional state I was in when I walked into Undocumented the first time. I'll tell you more about that next week. But first, I want to talk about something that's been on my mind for a little while. Manifestos. Many mass killers leave behind a manifesto. I've read a lot of them over the years. I was meant to read the Unabomber's manifesto, but it was just too long. I don't think a killer's manifesto should be longer than the Communist manifesto. That's the most famous manifesto. For good reason. There's a specter haunting Europe. Already you're interested. Is Karl Marx talking about ghosts? Why is there just one? How is that one ghost getting all over Europe? So, you know, you read more. Mass killer manifestos aren't usually that focused. When they are focused, it's on a very narrow set of issues. The last one I really got into was Christopher Dorner's. Christopher Dorner was an ex-cop who terrorized Los Angeles cops by killing some of them and their family members. I don't know if he counts as a mass killer or if he's more of a spree killer. He had a manifesto online. He explained that the cause of his mass killing or killing spree was a discrimination complaint he made against the LAPD. He felt they hadn't investigated his claim and had just ignored him. That's really all there was to his manifesto. I mean, the problem with that is it doesn't do anything towards justifying a spree. People are discriminated against every day in this country. Nobody does anything about it, even if they do complain. Most of them don't complain because they know nobody's going to do anything about it. If everyone like that went on a killing spree, there wouldn't be anyone left. I think Dorner's manifesto would have been good for a murder-suicide. If he just killed the cops who were being racist to him, and maybe someone on the panel who reviewed his case, then that letter would have covered it. But he killed family members, and cops he didn't even know. I think for that he should have gone into a broader critique of society, or human nature in general. If you don't agree with what I'm saying about it, read it yourself. You tell me if it seems like anything more than a letter from a disgruntled former employee. Well, that's all for this week. I'll be back next time to tell you about what life was like, my parents, and the old friends I reconnected with in Lakewood. Thanks for listening.